listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
This is Deanna, and it is Saturday. It is March 18th, 2017, and thanks for joining me here at RBN. And, of course, their website is republicbroadcasting.org. I hope that you will view our guest lineup at spingola.com. Just click on the radio schedule button on the left and select the year, month, and day. Please also visit the following websites, screeningsandyhook.net, SpingolaSpeaks.net, and WoolliesBlog.blogspot.com. The last two websites you may listen to the audio files of my programs, and of course, you may listen at the RBN archives. I hope that you will consider donating to the network. To do that, you may call 800-724-2719 or visit republicbroadcasting.org and click donate, or send donations to 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. You may email questions or comments to comment@spingola.email. You can join others in the chat room by clicking on the chat room button on my website, spingola.com, or by visiting spingola.chatango.com. We will take calls in the third hour at 800-313-9443. My guest today is Stefan Verstappen. He is the author of The Art of Urban Survival and The 36 Strategies of Ancient China. His websites are urbansurvivalstrategies.com. He is also, the other website is chinastrategies.com. He also is the creator of the video documentary titled Defense Against the Psychopath. Now, you might think that you don't need to watch this video or that you don't have any psychopaths in your life. Trust me, I think every family has at least one and maybe even more. Stefan, welcome to the program.
All right, Deanna, thanks for having me back.
Oh, it's been great. I think the last time you were on was like mid 2016. And yeah, we always have a good discussion. I always learn so much when we visit. You know, sometimes I learn too many things from my guest. I learn a lot from you. And I thank you. I thank you for your wisdom and your experience.
Oh, dear me. Okay. Thank you for having me back on again, Deanna. It's always a pleasure to talk with you because, as I think I messaged you, I'm looking forward to speaking with you because you're one of the few people I can speak to that really knows what's going on. So, and it's a pleasure.
Oh, well, thank you so much. You know, I've been thinking a lot about since we scheduled this program. Now, I know that the late night talk shows, not that I watch them, they're on. I don't sit and watch TV. It's just good. Not something I would do. Good. But I note that on the news and on the late night talk shows and just about everywhere on the media, there is a lot of negativity toward Trump. And I thought, well, gosh, it's so strange because he's increased the military budget. He's done a lot of things that would seem to please a lot of people. I know that, you know, he's taking away or changing, Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act. And I think, well, these people are just, they just have their hands out. You know, they want something for nothing. They're really demanding communism, which, of course, we've been practicing in this country for a long time. But I was thinking about why all this negativity, and I think that it's orchestrated in order to divide and to cause chaos and to get people really, really mad. What are your views on that?
Well, I think you're right. You know, I've been analyzing this myself since it all started. And just off the top, I'm not a Trump supporter. I'm not a Hillary supporter. Actually, I despise the whole political system. I think the whole thing is a complete farce. You know, there is no president that's going to get into power that's going to do anything good for the country. Forget about it. Everybody that's been in power for the last 100 years serves the interests of the banks and the military industrial complex and the corporations. Not one of them served the interests of the people, and not even JFK. I know he's a holy martyr because he was assassinated, and that was terrible, but you know, I don't think he was any better than the rest of them anyways. So certainly I have no hopes that Trump is going to, you know, make America great again. I really don't think that's going to happen, and I don't trust him. I mean, come on, first of all, he's a billionaire. You know, when was the last time we elected, say, a school teacher to be president or a trash collector? I would rather have a trash collector, a street sweeper, or a school teacher, or a janitor in power than one more billionaire. You know, these people were born with a silver spoon in their mouth. They have no ability to empathize with the average American hardworking person that goes to work every day. These people, yeah, I know he works hard and all that, but he gets chauffeured around. You know, he's never had, like all of them, you know, they've never really had to worry that, you know, where their next paycheck is coming from. How are they going to pay the rent at the end of the month? Like most of us and most of your listeners are thinking right now, that's all we think about, you know. How are we going to pay the rent next month? How am I going to afford, you know, the dentist for the kids? How am I going to afford the pharmaceutical drugs for my grandmother? You know, these people never had to worry about that. So they're incapable of empathizing with the average person. So I don't know why anybody thinks that this guy's going to make a bit of a difference. And also, he's a reality show star, for crying out loud. I mean, you're coming from the most fake, artificial, superficial, narcissistic, psychopathic industry in America, which is TV and movies, you know? It's like, you might as well recruit people from, you know, death row. You'd probably get a better quality of person from death row than you would get out of Hollywood and the whole entertainment complex. These people are all lunatics, you know. We, you know, I know we all like them. They're on TV, you know, they're like.
I don't think I like, when you were talking, I thought about that movie called Dave, and it's when some guy that he ran a temp agency. And he looked exactly like the president, and the president somehow went into a coma, and so they recruited this Dave guy, and he got in, and he started making some real changes, and he got his bookkeeper friend to come in and fix the budget, and it was a great movie. It was a terrific movie. That's the kind of guy we need, like you say, a street sweeper or somebody that runs a temp agency.
Yeah, I think it should be, I think people should become president through, a draw, a lottery, you know, and, provided they, you know, meet a minimum IQ requirement of, say, 100, put them in. How could they be worse than what we got? You know,
exactly.
How could they possibly be worse? So, but then the question is, okay, so, you know, Trump is not going to do anything for anybody, but then we see this massive media left-wing hysteria. I've never seen anything like it in my life. I'm 60 years old, Deanna, and, you know, I followed the elections, you know, in the U.S. and here in Canada and even in Europe for many years. I've never seen anything as insane as the you know, the call to rebellion against Trump. So
yes.
I'm thinking, what is this then? Because you always have to think, you know, que bono, you know, who's benefiting from all this? Where, what is the ultimate result of all this, this theater that they're...
Right. And that's what it is. Yes, I totally agree.
Yeah, it's theater. You know, it's, probably one of the best movies is Wag the Dog. If you haven't seen it, I highly recommend it because that's exactly how it works. You know, it's all public relations companies and focus groups and media experts, and they construct this. This is a big media show with Trump and all these people. So what is the point of this? What is the point? You know, that's what I'm thinking. Well,
You know, the other thing, oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
The other thing, too, is that I was talking about spending $4 something billion on building a wall when most of the drugs wealthy is going to build it for the drug situation rather than the people coming into the country, the illegal aliens coming into the country. I mean, most of the drugs come right through the, you know, they come through on the highway. People from this country go down, they pick up drugs, they bring them in. And as far as building a wall, it's only, what about the both coasts? I mean, what's it going to do there? So if you're going to spend $4 billion plus, why don't we fix the roads? Why don't we fix something that really needs fixing, like the bridges and the infrastructure that is crumbling? I mean, I think it's just all ridiculous.
No, of course. The wall is a farce. I mean, they shouldn't spend a penny on the wall. It's really easy. You set up some infrared cameras every quarter mile along the border. And as soon as you pick up infrared signature, you send a border patrol out. I mean, that's all you need to do. Or we got so many of these predator drones. Well, you know, fly sorties over there. They got the infrared. They can spot smugglers and illegal immigrants from 100 miles away. You could have border patrol agents waiting there 2 hours before they arrive. I mean, there's this wall thing is just, you know, the world is so insane, Deanna. Like that, this is even something to be contemplated. And as far as keeping drugs out, oh, please give me a break. The drugs come in through container ships. They don't check those containers. Look at, go to the port of LA there and watch the ships come in, each one with like 500 of these containers, hour after hour, unloading them, maybe 5, 6, 10,000 containers per day. And none of them, or almost none of them, are ever inspected. I mean, you could import half of Bolivia in a container and just ship it right in. You don't need to cross the border. You just bring it right into the port of Los Angeles or any other port in the United States.
Or through the main airport, right?
Or through the main airport, please, because we know who's really behind the drug running, and that's the CIA. I mean, this has been proven now. How many times do we have to go over this again? Do we not know that these are the bastards that are bringing it in? You know, we've known since the Vietnam War when they were, you know, filling up body bags with heroin from Cambodia and shipping it over, and how many investigative reporters have been murdered for, you know, spilling the beans on this.
Sure.
And now we've got the Afghan war where, oh, surprise, it's the major production center in the world for heroin. How come we're always fighting wars in these major heroin production centers like Vietnam, the Golden Triangle? And by the way, I was in the Golden Triangle. I was up in there around Burma, Thailand, and Cambodia, you know, and you know, that's when I was in there, everybody knew it was the Americans that were buying all the heroin. You know, all the local tribes people. I mean, this was not a secret there. It was like, you know, Starbucks sells coffee. The American government imports drugs. I mean, that's how obvious it is to everybody in the world except Americans. So this wall to keep out drugs. Oh, please. What? It's a sideshow. It's a distraction. And if they should ever go ahead and spend, or should I say, piss away that kind of money, you know, I give up. There's people homeless sleeping in the streets, you know, that money could go to build small communities and shelters and feed people. And, you know, never mind. You want to stop the drug trade? Get rid of the CIA. Very simple.
Right.
Yes. And then go after the banks that launder all the money from the trade. You know, how many times have we seen it now? All these big international banks of great standing and reputation. And then, well, it turns out they were laundering drug money. They were laundering illegal weapons trade money. I mean, you know, these guys, watch that documentary, Cocaine Cowboys, you know, and these guys were small-time players. They only made, you know, a few million dollars a day. And where did they go to get their money laundered? To the bank, you know. Everybody knew about it. They still know about it. So, look, let's dispose of any of this fantasy that all this drugs and money and all that is all being run by criminal gangs. Yeah, criminal gangs that are called banks.
Right, and politicians. Like
and they're
Clintons,
called lackeys.
The Bushes. You know.
Yeah. And the Clintons, yeah. You know, look at the
story
there. But even Clinton, let's face it, what he was doing there with, you know, Trump at the coke hanging off in Arkansas and, in the field and even having to murder those poor kids that saw it all. And, that's chump change. That kind of drug smuggling is chump change. Clinton was probably just doing that because remember these psychopaths and the Clintons are classic psychopathic family. Jesus Christ. They're like Carla Homolka and what was his name? Paul Bernardo, two famous serial killers here in Canada. They're a beautiful couple, very charming, you know, and, they would kidnap girls and torture them and murder them. Nice couple, just like the Clintons. So they probably were doing that, you know, just to make a little bit extra money. But that wasn't the major source of the drug trade. The major source, we don't know, but we can guess.
Sure.
You know.
Wow. Well, I think that the people who rise to the top of any organization have to stab a few people in the back to get there. And I know that whether you're talking about politics, whether you're talking about corporations, whether you're talking about churches, the people at the top get there because they are, they're kind of psychopathic.
They are. You know, there's that saying, behind every great wealth, there's a great crime. And that's true. You know, like look at, for example, take the whole idea of aristocracy and kingship, which is another concept I can't get my head around how people can believe this. Like, you know, they fawn and curtsy for this Queen of England and all that. The reason she is there is because somewhere her ancestors were more efficient killers than somebody else's ancestors. That's all. That's all
right.
It is.
Right.
And that's all it has been. I mean, I've read a lot of history, you know, the Chinese and Romanism are two of my favorites and a bit of European and English history. And, you know, all these kings that came to power, you know, and started royal dynasties, how did they get power? Because they were the nicest guys, you know, because they were so smart. No, because they were ruthless butchers. They murdered their parents. They murdered their brothers. They murdered their sisters, their nephews. Anybody that stood in the way between them and power, they murdered either directly or indirectly or framed charges against them and had them assassinated. Then once they got into power, the next thing they do is they kill everybody that might be a threat. So any previous dynastic bloodlines that still might be, you know, running around that might have some distant claim to the throne that could, you know, provide a threat later on in the regime, they're hunted down and killed. So all these aristocrats and the kings and all that. Okay, maybe Queen Elizabeth didn't murder and eat babies. I don't know. Who knows? But it, you know, it's no reason to curtsy to her because the only reason she's there is because, again, in the history of their bloodline, there were, and probably still are, major murderous psychopaths, and that's how they got back.
You know, you have to look at, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but there was still some murdering going on. I mean, look at Princess Diana. I mean, she was murdered.
Sure she was.
And you think, well, so it's still happening, even if it seems like it doesn't have anything to do with the Queen. There was certainly something there that they had to take her out. And it wasn't because she was having an affair.
No,
it was something else.
Something else, yeah. No, yeah, I was trying to be nice, but look, because I know I come off sounding very negative, and I don't want to, you know, turn people off with by being too negative, but look, this is life, you know. They murdered Princess Diana. They're probably still killing people, and that evil monster in there probably does murder and eat babies. What do I know? But what I do know is they're not good people. They don't. You know, like, look at the money they're sucking up out of the British taxpayer. And me, as a Canadian, my taxes go to support her, too, right? So I got to pay for this part. They already have more money than anybody knows what to do with, more than they could spend in 1,000 lifetimes, but they have to take my money. So, yeah, that's a nice person. You know what? I don't go down the street and mug kindergarten kids, you know, for their lunch money. I don't do that.
Exactly. Oh, we have a break. Oh, that was fast. Okay. We'll be right back in 3 minutes. is Stefan Verstappen, and he is the author of The Art of Urban Survival and the 36 Strategies of Ancient China. His websites are urbansurvivalstrategies.com and Christian or China, ChinaStrategies.com. I was reading the, I was looking in the chat room and somebody was talking about Christian earlier. Anyway,
so let's get back to, yeah, sorry, just to finish off your original question, this Trump thing, I think it's to cause, to divide the American people.
Yeah.
To create, social unrest. And, I think, they're planning on having a really violent summer. You know, all we need to see is one more person's shot, whether it's a black or a white, a police or not a police, you know, and to get everybody riled up, and then there'll be riots in the streets, and then they can send in, they're already planning to send in the National Guard here. I think Trump was sending some the National Guard to Chicago. So, you know, once they have, you know, when you see tyranny, what happens is once they've taken another one of your freedoms, it never comes back, right?
Exactly.
So none of these laws are ever repealed, right? So, oh, we're going to take another little piece of your freedom. Oh, don't worry, it's for your safety, and we'll give it back to you later after the threat is gone. No, it never comes back, right? Like income tax was supposed to be just for, you know, to pay off the First World War debt. We'll drop it after we've paid off First World War, yeah. So
it's like all the tollways. You know, they had this in Chicago. Oh, we're just going to have a tollway to pay off the highway. That was something like 50 years ago or, yeah, you know, maybe less. But sure, that's what they do. And the other thing, too, is with the of course, they always get all these people on who are talking about, oh, I'm not going to have health insurance. I'm just not going to. And, you know, my mother's sick and this and that. But they don't realize that just because you get to pay for health insurance doesn't mean that you're going to get health care. I mean, this insurance is a big scam to begin with.
Sure.
So they pretend like they've given you something and then they take it back and people complain because, as I said before, there's a lot of people with their hand out. They think that they think they're entitled to get something for nothing. That's communism.
Yeah. It is communism. And what the government does, and you know, I'm sorry, I apologize to the listeners. I sometimes get a bit hot-headed because I feel passionately about, you know, because this is insanity. Now, if it was just insanity for entertainment's sake, okay, fine. I don't care what people do. Let them be as crazy as they want. But this insanity is costing lives and livelihoods. People are dying from this. People are distressed. They're, you know, we've got mental illness, and we've got alcoholism and drug abuse and homelessness and child abuse, and all of this is a ripple effect from this central madness, this government, you know. So that's why I get upset about it, because, you know, I if it wasn't hurting anybody, then okay, everybody's Napoleon or, you know, whatever.
Sure.
Reincarnated as Jesus Christ. Let them all run around. Who cares? But this insanity is killing us. You know, and we're letting them get away with it, and there's not enough people that will take a hard look at it, and I know I come off sounding negative. Yeah, oh yeah. There goes Stefan again. He's always talking about this stuff. Yeah, I'm talking about it, because there's blood on the streets. How can you not talk about it? You know, I don't want to just turn my head to it. I don't think about it all day long and talk about it all day long, but I'm aware of it, and I do what I can in different ways to try and fight it, you know. And I think we all need to do that. We got to fight this thing. It's killing us, you know, and it's destroying our civilization. You know, we're not going to, you know, in another 20 years, freedom will be a thing of the past. It won't even be written up in history books, you know. People
sure.
won't even have a clue as to what freedom is, because even now, look at the younger generation. Do they know the kind of freedoms I had when I was, 40 years ago? I can't even explain it to them, you know, the difference already. So, you know, they'll take it and they won't give it back. So this summer, you know, they're going to put the troops on the street. And guess what? The troops will always be on the street.
Oh, absolutely. Sure.
So that's
it's just like with this thing in Chicago. I mean, we have so many murders. I think Chicago is the murder capital of the country. And Trump said, oh, you know, we better get some federal help there in Chicago. Well, when you look at who the mayor is, Rahm Emanuel, I mean, his father helped to blow up the King David Hotel. Oh, okay, we've got a three-minute break. We'll be right back. All righty, welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Stefan Verstappen, and his websites are urbansurvivalstrategies.com and ChinaStrategies.com, and we're talking about the politicians, and I'm thinking, gosh, you know, these politicians, a lot of them can cover their background, but when you get somebody like Rahm Emanuel, I mean, he's just, you know, his background, his father's background, his brother, apparently is the guy that actually wrote the Affordable Care Act. And, he believes that people should die at a certain age. So, I mean, it's just amazing how these people just kind of climb to the top over the backs of others. And you said something that, you said that people, will grow up never knowing what freedom is. And I thought there are people right now, young people who have grown up accepting the idea that abortion is just, it's okay because it was passed. It's a law that you can get one, and they don't even think about the morality of it or the implications of it. If it's a law, then it's okay. They don't question anything about how the law was passed, why it was passed. They just accept it that, well, it's the law. That makes it okay. And it's the law. You can go and kill people in other countries. If the president says, oh, we're going to declare war against Afghanistan because some guy's over there. Well, you know, get the guy. Don't go and bomb the whole country to smithereens. But because the president says, we're going to go to war, you have all these hot doggers going, getting their gun and going down and signing up and, oh, let's go to war. Let's wave that flag. I mean, it's just insane.
Yeah, it is insane. It scares me. It scares me because it is so, you know, from the perspective of you know, being a rational human being on this planet, it's such madness, you know, and the thing is, the repercussions from this, you know, they're killing people, you know,
yes,
and torturing people and the blood and, you know, I have a short series of videos called Paradise Stolen. And the first video talks about what we spent on the Middle East wars, right?
Right.
And I figured it out, you know, for the money we spent to murder people that never did anything to us, you know, we could have built a small house for every family in America. You know, we could have built communities. There would not be, we could have eradicated poverty and homelessness for the money we spent to go and kill people that never did anything to us. So, you know, that's why I have a hard time keeping my temper, you know.
Sure. But it makes a lot of money for people who are creating the armaments, and the things that you need for war. I understand Bernard Baruch made $50 million from World War I. He made $50 million just in his copper investments.
Yeah.
So somebody's benefiting.
Oh yeah, somebody's benefiting and it's on our backs, and this is where the insanity comes in. We let it happen. You know, the average person lets it happen. Yeah, there's a few of these. So just, you know, Bernard Baruch, you know, he makes $50 million. He probably already had several million dollars anyways.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And so he didn't need it. He didn't, you know, I mean, and so, you know, how many millions died? World War One is what, researching World War One is what turned me on to psychopaths.
Because oh, yes.
When I was reading the horror and the insanity of that war, that was like the most useless war. Well, they were all useless. But that one was especially useless. You know, there was no reason for that war whatsoever. Nobody was invading nobody until they riled it all up. Just like they're riling everything up to right now with Trump and the liberals and they're riling everybody up in the States and everybody's falling for it again. You know, and now they're trying to rile up war with Russia or China or anybody, I guess. And everybody's falling for it again. I give up. I don't know what to say. How can we let ourselves be so exploited by a handful of psychopaths? You know, and for nothing. You know, we could have had paradise on earth. And that was the point of that series of videos and the other four videos follow up with, you know, pointing out very simply that, you know, the government takes everything from us. You know, they take a dollar and they hand us back a shiny dime and everybody thinks they got something from the government.
You know? Sure.
I'll take the paper dollar and here's a shiny penny for you. Isn't that nice? Oh yeah, give me more. So, but anyways, guys, you know, we need to talk to our friends and family and coworkers about this because we're the ones that are suffering.
And how is it? How did the psychopaths manage to make the war something that the American people accepted as something they wanted to participate in? That is what is so interesting. They put the responsibility on the people instead of us saying, well, why should we go and fight a war just because you say so? Now the people they accept it as something that is noble and wonderful to do. It is amazing.
Well, it's human nature. You know, we have, and you know, they've spent untold amount of money studying human nature and psychology to figure out the best way to push our buttons and manipulate us. But actually, you know, everybody thinks, oh, they're evil geniuses. It's actually not that difficult. Let's say I want everybody to go kill Bob, right? Just some guy at the office, let's say, okay? Everybody in the office, and I say, guys, we got to go kill Bob. And they'll go like, well, why do you want to go kill Bob? Bob didn't do anything. You know,
sure.
So that's not going to work. But I go and I hire a hooker. And we get some fake blood running down her nose with the shovel her hair. And we'll rip her clothes. And she comes into the office and says, Bob just raped me. Now everybody's going to go and kill Bob.
Sure.
Right? Or I can hire a 12-year-old girl to come in and do the same thing, you know, tell her she's doing an acting gig, put some fake blood on her. Bob raped me in the bathroom. Now everybody's going to go kill Bob. It's so easy. It's not genius, you know. And that's what psychopaths do. The thing is, the average human being doesn't understand how psychopaths work and that they could fake this stuff. They think that if a woman comes in bleeding and she says Bob raped her, they're going to believe the woman. And this is a mistake that we have. We believe, you know, things on face value. We make knee-jerk reactions to it. We jump to conclusions and we go, well, look, she's bleeding. Her hair is disheveled. She must be telling the truth. Wait a minute. People don't always tell the truth. So we saw it there with the First World Operation Desert Storm there, where they had that girl come out and start crying about the babies being taken out of the incubators and thrown on the floors.
Right.
Everybody bought it. Right away, nobody questioned it. Oh,
right.
Well, in that case, let's go and bomb these bastards. Okay, off they go. You know, folks, there's a lot of liars.
Yeah, let's go and bomb the babies. Why
let the Iraqis have all the fun killing babies? We're going to kill some ourselves.
Yeah. Oh, that's awful. That is really awful. But you're right. You're right. And the average person, isn't a compulsive liar. So they just don't see through this.
They don't see through it.
Wow.
That's the problem. You know, and that's why, you know, like in my latest book, The Master's Guide to the Way of the Warrior, my theory is that, you know, people need to be more of a warrior. And a warrior is ruthless and cunning, right? So if somebody says, geez, you know, I got a good investment in a gold mine here in Philadelphia, you know, like, you know, be a little bit ruthless, a little bit skeptical, right?
Sure.
don't fall hook, line, and sinker for every line of bull feeds us. You know, you got to think for yourselves. So this kind of attitude, you got to be tough and ruthless. I'm sorry, it's a cruel world, and there's a lot of violence in it. But you, in order to protect yourself from being exploited, have to learn how to read people, and especially read psychopaths, and don't just emotionally react to images, because that's what they do, is to use images, right?
Sure. And they also put you through boot camp. Okay, as far as the military, even
drafted.
Drafted, yes. Couldn't think of what they were. Okay, if you've been drafted, they put you through boot camp, and they indoctrinate you to, and it's, I don't know how to explain it, but it is very compelling. I mean, they put you through lengthy classes all day. You get very little sleep. You get very little, 10 minutes to eat. I mean, it is really, very difficult to see through that indoctrination. It's the same thing, it's the same as college's indoctrination. We're all indoctrinated unless we become a critical thinker and say, hey, is what this teacher, is this the truth? Is she telling me the truth? Or is this just what's in the textbook that somebody wrote? For instance, history. We're never going to learn accurate history at school, ever. That's just not,
you're indoctrinated from the day you start kindergarten. You know,
sure.
The system has been set up and has been in play for a long time. Now, you know, I know a lot of people think that. I think that people are stupid, and yeah, they are stupid, but it's not their fault. They are the product of our education system. That's why they're stupid. And we've been indoctrinated from day one. It's been set up. It's been planned. We already, you know, we read the history, you know, of the Prussian model for public education, you know, to make people into, you know, obedient, efficient workers and soldiers. That was the point of public education from its outset. That's why they brought in public education. Nobody was, you know, the people behind this weren't thinking about, oh, enlightening the people, making them all, you know, give them a liberal education, a Renaissance education. No, from the very beginning, it was instituted to produce factory workers and cannon
and soldiers. Yes, and cannon fodder.
Yeah, that's all it was meant to do. And so far, they've been wildly successful. And that's why people are stupid, because the longer you stay in the education system, the dumber you get. That's why college, you know, it's unbelievable. Another form of insanity to spend $60,000, $150,000 to be indoctrinated and to be indebted for life to the banks that you can never escape, not even by declaring bankruptcy. I mean, this is unbelievable. And you come out of it dumber than when you went in after high school. And right. Trust me. You know, I remember I was teaching my class, and I had a couple of college students, and they were doing their homework in the lobby there. I came out, and I said, what are you doing there? Oh, it's my homework assignment. I said, what are you taking? I'm taking archaeology in college. And now I love archaeology and history. You know, I'm a big fan of it. Sure. I read everything I can. I love those subjects. And so I said, oh, interesting. Let me take a look. Well, Deanna, I couldn't believe it. I thought this was like, this was a grade one textbook, you know. It was the most inane material I've ever seen. I mean, just read one decent book on history and you would surpass 4 years of archaeology in college. It was just, it was, you know, there was a picture of a pyramid and then it said, this is a pyramid. A pyramid is in Egypt. Egypt is a country. I mean, it was that stupid.
Holy cow, yeah.
No, I couldn't believe it. I said, no, no, okay, you're kidding me, right? This is not really your college assignment. They go, yeah, it is, it is. I said, no, this is what you have to learn in college. Yes. I said, this stuff here. You know, I couldn't believe it was that simple. But that's what's happened. So yeah, people are stupid. Yeah, hello. Thanks to the government, because the government likes stupid people, so they can send them off to war to get killed and make a lot of money.
Yes, and certainly the government, well, it is a corporation, and it is the mother corporation, and they are in bed with the other corporations that want to make money. So, of course, it's always been about money, whether you're talking about whatever you're talking about, whether you're talking about churches that collect a lot of money, whether you're talking about corporations that kill for money. Oh, gosh, I mean, it just...
Yeah.
Just the thought, killing other people for money. And then you have the prison system where you're going to slap people in jail for years and years for nonviolent crimes and then put them to work, working for corporations for 5 cents an hour.
Yeah. And it's costing the taxpayer, what, $60,000, $65,000, $70,000 per prisoner per year?
Yeah.
I mean, so if you sentence somebody to 1 year in prison, why not just buy them a house? Like, how could that be worse?
And help them get rehabilitated.
Yeah. So you send somebody to prison, and there they're going to get raped and abused and get into fights, and they'll be even more indoctrinated into the criminal lifestyle. I mean, if you want to produce criminals, send people to prison, because when they come out, they're more criminal than they went in, right? I mean, the whole system, everything in our society is just inverted and backwards, and black is white and white is black. So, yeah, you know, we're going to send people to prison. Contrast that to what I saw there with the Swedish prisons, where they live in their own little guest cottage by the lake.
Like, I mean, wow.
They have wood shops. They have common areas. There's no prison guards. There's no prison fences and cells and all that. They put them up into small cottages, and, you know, and guess what their recidivism rate is? You know, a lot less than it is here in the States, you know.
Sure.
They don't come out more hardened than they went in, which is what our system does, you know.
Sure. Well, so, I think people, if you steal something, then you should work to pay it back. I think you should have to pay restitution, not go to jail where you can't fix what you've done. I believe that people should, of course, I mean, you can't restore life if you kill somebody, but it's just really a warped system.
There's money in that, Deanna. You know, you got to think smart.
Yes.
There's no money in that. There's money in running a prison, because you'd get to charge the government $70,000 per person, you know.
Right.
There's good profit margin in there, you know. The shareholders will be very happy. The board of directors will give you a fat raise at Christmas.
Sure. Wow. Okay, we'll be right back in 3 minutes. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest is Stefan Verstappen, and his websites are urbansurvivalstrategies.com and chinastrategies.com. We're talking about the military, and I think there's another consequence of being in the military is that years ago, if you had any mental issues or something like that, then they rejected you. They denied you even enlisting. They just didn't want you. And now what they're doing to the military is that first they vaccinate them with all kinds of horrid, horrid things. They are destroying them with psych drugs. A lot of the people in the military are given psychiatric drugs, and you combine that with vaccines and what they experience, what they see, when they get home, they're not the same people that they used to be. Now, given that the military, given that killing other people is a very, well, it's a very traumatic thing. And I know that, that I had uncles that were in World War II, and they came home, they weren't the same people as they were before. But now you have young people coming back that can't function. They can't get a job. They have PTSD. They just can't function. can't get a job. So is the military not only destroying other countries, it's also destroying a group of people that might be able to fight for the real freedom in for this country?
Yeah, it's part of the system, you know, because first of all, men are pretty much disposable as it is in society. We're meant to provide benefits and resources and not demand too much. And then once our usefulness is over, then the government and the corporations don't care what happens to them. And the story of soldiers is a very tragic story, because what the military does is it preys upon an archetype that is very intrinsic to being a man, and that is the archetype of being a warrior. Men want to feel that they're strong and they're powerful, and they are there to protect the women and protect their country, and you know, be brave and strong and appear that way. This is the warrior archetype. Real men, that's what they want. That's what they feel. That's what they yearn for, to have that, you know, that sense of belonging to a community of warriors, and we're men and we'll build bridges and we'll build armies. We'll, you know, explore the forest and we'll sail the oceans. And that's the warrior spirit. That's the warrior ethic. And it's intrinsic to our genetics. For men, that is our genetics. We want to be providers. We want to be producers, builders. We want to exert our will and power into the world and create things and protect people. Okay. It's genetics. Women have a different genetics. They're the caregivers, the mothers, you know, but men are the producers and the protectors. That's what we want. So what the military does, because thanks to our society.
Whoops. Okay. We're at the top of the hour. We will be right back in 3 minutes.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Today is Stefan Verstappen. That's Verstappen. And he is the author of The Art of Urban Survival and the 36 Strategies of Ancient China. And you have another book. What's the name of the other book?
It's called The Master's Guide to the Way of the Warrior.
Okay. I saw that on your website. Alrighty. And the websites are urbansurvivalstrategies.com and chinastrategies.com. And he is also the creator of the video documentary titled Defense Against the Psychopath. Okay. So we're talking about, you were explaining why people join the military.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I can see that. The people want to feel like they're strong and they want to protect their country, but their country doesn't need protecting, but I don't know why they don't get that part.
Yeah. Well, that's part of the programming, because, you know, our culture has been so twisted. We don't have an outlet for masculinity and male aggression. We don't have, you know, proper channels for that. And so what happens, for example, in the black community is the only outlet for that is gangsters. You know, look at the videos and the rap music, and, you know, that's appealing to the warrior ethic. Right? That's why, you know, we have that problem in Chicago and other communities. It's not because, so much because of the drugs, but, you know, if the government would stop selling drugs to those neighborhoods,
they'd have yes.
a problem,
yes.
you know. And if the government would stop providing them with firearms, that would help too, because where do you think they get all these guns from? My God, there's thousands and thousands of illegal guns. They're not all from, you know, gun store robberies or home break-ins, you know, and especially since we saw that Fast and Furious nonsense going on there, where Obama sold military firearms to the Medellin cartel in Mexico. I mean, come on, You know, supposedly under the pretext after they got caught of, oh, we're going to try and track those guns. I mean, the whole thing was just such a blatant lie and a farce. Wow. The government's in on drug running, and they're also the major suppliers of weapons throughout the world, including our own neighborhood. So let's get that straight. You know, let's not pretend that it's something else. It's not. It's the government. They're behind it.
Sure.
Sorry, I get off on a rant. These are evil bastards, you know.
And they are the ones that really, well, they're bringing the drugs into the country, and they are making certain that the people who are feeling, well, I was talking to my husband about this the other day, that people who feel like they can't do something, like they're feeling down, drugs give them a feeling, it makes them feel good for its temporary feeling, but it makes them feel better. And they're going to do anything that they can, including robbery or whatever, in order to get money for drugs. And it's the people, the CIA, as you said, that, or the government who's bringing them in.
Yeah. Yeah, so what they've done is they've so poisoned our culture and our society that men don't have an outlet to express their masculinity anymore, other than through drugs, through joining a gang where, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Or through joining the military. Those are the outlets, and that's done on purpose. You know, in more primitive traditions, for example, what we don't have is a coming of age ceremony for men. In primitive traditions, you took 13-year-old boys and you brought them and you trained them, and then you sent them into the woods for a week to live by themselves. And, you know, this was empowering. It was sort of a ceremony that marked the beginning of manhood, and once you became a man, then you had these kind of responsibilities to your tribe and to your group and to your family, and they felt a part of something. They felt that they were doing something to, again, protect the community, protect the women, to be, you know, strong and brave in the eyes. You know, men do everything for women's attention. That's why mostly what we're doing, you know, it's just like, you know, like every other species, you know, the men have to puff up and splay their feathers or, you know, and
like
a peacock to attract the females. So we do all this to attract the females. Men want to, you know, appear to be strong and athletic and powerful, and all the girls will swoon, and you know, that's what we live for until we hit about 60, and then it starts to fade. But, you know, the hormones stop raging quite as much, but when you're young, that's all men want to do. They want to appear competent and powerful in front of the females so that the females will love them. That's what we want, you know, and we're happy to protect them and do everything for them and work hard and build a house and go and fight for the country. Anyways, look, that's how they get us, okay, because it's part of our genetics.
Right.
So they sucker us into that. So we either go into the army or we go into a gang or we take drugs to sort of try to feel something that has been denied us through every other channel. Now, what happens when they get him into the army is one thing. Because, look, I was in the States. I lived in California for 12 years. I remember the TV commercials, right? There was one I particularly remember. And it starts off with, like, a knight in shining armor, right? A medieval, you know, fantasy knight. He's got the sword and the shield and shining armor. And he's fighting a dragon or something like that. And then suddenly the image morphs into a Marine. Right? In full, full blue dress, right? Right. They got a beautiful costume. I love the Marine costumes. It's a great outfit. So there you go. That's what they're doing. See, they're appealing to the
world. Oh, sure.
Right?
Yeah.
You're the knight in shining armor fighting the dragon and saving the damsel. That's what men like. They like that stuff. Then,
well, you know, that starts early for some people. That starts with Boy Scouts.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you have to remember who created the Boy Scouts and who brought it into this country. And it really has Freemasonry base. But, you know, you earn all these badges and you get to build fires and you get to do that. You get to wear these badges on your clothes. Same thing in the military.
Sure. But you know what? I don't have anything against the Boy Scouts. I was a Boy Scout, and I think, you see, we have that instinct anyways, so we need to do something like that. Better to channel it into getting a badge for learning how to do first aid, or getting a badge because you know how to build a shelter, or getting a badge because you've been on a 20-mile hike. I'd rather see that than going into the Army or joining a street gang, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I know it's corny, and of course it was pre-military training, but that's, you know, this is our instinct to do that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
This is
I can see your point. Yeah, I can see your point.
So how do we channel that into something positive rather than something violent like the military? I know there's people that don't like the Boy Scouts, and it's already gone out of fashion. I don't even know if there are still Boy Scouts anymore. I'm all in favor of Boy Scouts. I think if you can keep the pedophiles out, oh my God, they seem to be everywhere, these bastards. But anyways, we're trying to channel male energy into positive activities, and then so for me, Boy Scouts, that's great. You know, you're full of testosterone and you want to go and prove what a tough guy you are. Great. Pick up the canoe, go canoe, come back in a week and tell me how it was, you know,
mm-hmm.
Either that than, you know, they're so frustrated that they have to take drugs, or they're so frustrated that the only, you know, outlet is joining the military or a street gang. That's what they've left us, you know?
Sure. But, when we had more of an agrarian society, we didn't have so much of this. We did not have, because people were out working in their fields and there were, families worked together. You didn't have that people weren't on so many ego trips.
Right, right. But an agrarian society, again, the male energy was channeled into being a good farmer. You know,
Right. Now,
you know, all the girls will swoon when they see some guy in a fancy car and an expensive watch, right? In an agrarian society, the girls will swoon because Billy, increased his sheep flocks, you know, and because Bobby's pigs are the fattest pigs in the county, you know, so it was still there, but it was more benevolent. You know, it was channeled into productive, he's a good farmer. Look at what he raised so many vegetables and crops and his herds increased and he'd make a good husband for you. You know,
Sure.
So we're back into impressing the girls, but in an agrarian society, you impressed them by being a good farmer, good provider, you know? So those things are denied us. And instead we're fed a lot of crap. And the other thing is, you know, professional sports. Ugh.
Don't get me started.
So now again, here we are. Because remember, men have this, there's nothing you can do to get rid of it unless you castrate every boy at birth. You know, men have this kind of instinct. So, they don't like that because that causes trouble for the psychopaths in charge. Men start to ask questions. Maybe they resist being chained and enslaved. You know, we don't want them to resist enslavement. That's what we want. So let's redirect this male masculine energy into these useless activities and that we can make a profit from. And they make a profit from the street gang because, hey, you know, the importers of all the drugs are making a profit on these street gangs, and the prison industrial system is making a profit on the street gangs, and you know, the gun smugglers are making a profit on that, so that's good. And then we got the military where everybody's making a profit on that, so that's good. And the other area is, of course, professional sports, where, you know, we get all these guys to somehow project their masculinity into strangers that run around chasing a ball. I mean, like, you can't, you know.
Exactly.
Somebody coming from another planet and you would explain that to them and they would say, okay, we're leaving. It's so insane. I don't understand how men can get so excited, by watching other men chase a ball. Men that they have no connection to. Look, it's different. You know, you're on the company baseball team. You get together on Sundays and you play baseball. Man, that is beautiful. I love that. That's a great activity.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
You know, the kids are playing soccer. Great. The kids are playing soccer, but to sit on your face on the couch and watch a TV and, or God forbid you pay, I don't know how much the tickets are going for these days. It's a fortune to go see a professional sports. And then you got to buy all the pop and the beer and the hot dogs at, you know, triple the cost. You know,
right.
to do that, that to me is insanity. You know, I can see playing sports. Okay. It's fun. You know, go and play yourself, but to watch and then somehow feel like, oh, our team, this and that. And then look at what happens in Europe with the soccer games. You know, they have riots and fighting in the benches.
Wow. Yeah, you're right. Man. You know, the other thing too is that, children now, from very young are so tied into their gadgets that they don't get outside. They're not playing the sports that they used to. Well, I guess some of them are, but they're not getting as much exercise, which would really, really be very helpful. But you're right too about the sports, and they have been so militarized. You know, you have your uniform, you have your colors, you have the national anthem. Why do they play the national anthem at the beginning of, they still do that, I assume, yeah, at the beginning of a game? What is that all about?
It's operant conditioning. You know, Pavlov came up with this a long time ago. They've known this stuff. You combine two stimulus together and they become associated with each other until one triggers the other. So what they want to do is they go, everybody's all excited about the big game. Now they paired that with the national anthem. So now everybody's excited about the big game. And when they hear the national anthem, that will invoke the same excitement that they had when they were attending the game. You pair those things together. You know, that's why the commercial for the recruitment commercial, that's why they pair a knight in shining armor to a marine in dress blues. They put those two images together so that they condition you to associate one with the other. So now you want to be a knight in shining armor? Sure, join the Marines.
Right.
So it's all just behavioral conditioning, you know. It's classic. It's really underhanded, and they're not geniuses. I could do this. You know, if I had control over the media and the power that these psychopaths have, I could reverse this in 10 years and make it so that, you know, people admired independent thinking rather than going with the crowd, or people admired honesty rather than being a devious son, you know. People are easily programmed, but what's happened is we've let the psychopaths in charge of the machinery to program people. And when they got in charge of that, they programmed people to be the worst that they could be rather than the best they could be, you know, and that's what we have now. We have basically a very sick, narcissistic, psychopathic society, because starting in school, starting with the media and all the way through, that's the programming has been under the control of these people, and they want the worst for humanity, and that's what their programming is producing, the worst of humanity.
And it's been incremental. I mean, they didn't just start out that way. They started out with programs on TV and on the radio that were benign, or that promoted something really good.
Yeah.
Or a good family life. I don't know. I can't remember. You know, some of the, I don't know, father knows best and that kind of thing. But then all of a sudden, oh, and they also promoted a lot of, programs that promoted hospitals and how doctors are so smart. And if you need something, you go to your doctor. So it's been incremental, but it's all programming.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, and it's been successful, and it's been ongoing for a long time. So, you know, I don't blame people, you know, I don't, because they didn't have a chance. They didn't have a chance, right? They didn't have a chance. Nobody ever spoke truth to them. Most people that have gone, born and raised in this society for the last 60 years probably never heard a single word of truth about the way the world really works. You know, not in the history, not under, you know, political sciences, not under economics class. Not a word of truth. They're whole lies. So how can you blame them that they can't tell the difference between lies and truth? They never heard truth. So how can they tell the difference, you know?
Sure.
So I don't blame people. I get mad, but I don't blame them.
Sure. Yes, and it is something to get mad at. But the thing too is that churches, I cannot believe that there are churches. well, I can't believe it, that churches are promoting warfare and promoting all of the same kind of behavior. They're not coming out and doing their job and saying, wait, hold it, except for maybe the Amish, okay? I mean, they're anti-war. And the witch?
The Quakers.
Right. The Quakers, well, except for, what's his name, Nixon. He was supposed to be a Quaker, and he certainly wasn't.
No, I don't mind the Amish and the Quakers. I actually admire them because at least they stick to their principles, you know?
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. But where are the rest of them?
I have a chapter in my book. I was going to do an excerpt, and I was just thinking, should I post this excerpt to my website? And I was debating between which one of these two chapters to post. But the chapter in question was called A Time to Kill. And it's a little bit controversial, but in the chapter I make the case that this whole idea of nonviolence is another lie. You know, religion all promotes this idea that nonviolence is the highest virtue. And that's actually not true. And as a matter of fact, the religions themselves use that to exploit people. For example, you know, we're all told about about Jesus and love thy neighbor and turn the other cheek, and we have, you know, the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not kill. Okay, during peacetime, all the churches are promoting that, right? Oh, I want to rise up against the government. Oh, no, give unto Caesar, thou shalt not kill, you know, turn the other cheek, love thy neighbor, love thy enemy. Oh, okay, well, then I'll step down from rebelling against the government. Good, 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 step down. Then the government declares war. Suddenly, all these preachers and priests and rabbis, they're all out, you know, on the edge of the battlefield saying prayers, you know, may God be on our side while we go out and kill a bunch of innocent, you know, German farm boys and bakers, you know, in useless, pathetic war. Suddenly, all the churches are out. Wait a minute. Wait, hold on. What happened to turn your other cheek? What happened to thou shalt not kill? What happened to love thy enemy and thy neighbor? No. Oh, well, that suddenly goes out the window. So, you know, religions are a tool of the state. They've always been in competition with it, but usually they form a symbiotic relationship. And that's what these psychopaths do. Look, you know, you get three con artists come into a hick town in Kansas in the 1900s. Those three con artists work together to fleece everybody in that town, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're not fighting each other. They know that they're the con artists, they're the psychopaths, and they work together to fleece. That's what we see today with government and religion, and that's the way it's always been. Government and religion, two con artists working together to fleece the people. You know, that's why the church will say, this king is ordained by God. You know, well, that king murdered his brother, his mother, his sister, his aunts and uncles, you know, fought several wars that resulted in tens of thousands of deaths, but God chose him, you know, come on.
Or we believe in supporting the government and paying our taxes and that kind of thing. I mean, you can get thrown out of some churches because you oppose taxes.
Yeah.
You can get excommunicated.
Yeah, that's an accident. No, they're both con artists. They're both in on the con. They got each other's back. They'll squabble once in a while. You know, 100 years war, 30 years war. They'll squabble a little bit. But for most of the time, they work together. And especially now, the last 100 years in the United States, they're all in it together. They know they're the con artists. They know everybody else is an idiot. And they just got to, like, you know, don't blow the con. Don't blow the cover. Let's just keep fleecing these idiots. And that's what they're doing.
Sure. Now, you have a great admiration for the Chinese, or for their, you know, I've read Art of War, and in your book, the book that you can get it in Kindle version, your last book also, The 36 Strategies of Ancient China, and that's a book, well, you wrote it, what, 1999? Wow, that's been out a while.
Yeah. It still sells.
Yeah, well, it should.
It's gone into a reprint, actually. It's gone into a second reprint.
Right, in 2012. Mm. But you really, I like that book because of, well, it's a good book, for one thing. But the tactics are good. The things that you, the illustrations and really we're fighting a war, aren't we?
Yes. But let me clarify. I'm not a big fan of the Chinese.
Okay. But of their tactics.
Well, you've got to understand that the Chinese have pretty much the longest unbroken civilization on the planet, right? They traced their civilization back at least 3,000 years. And so they have had the most experience with government and tyranny and empire. And so over those 3,000 years, they have evolved some of the most ruthless and cunning attitudes to how to survive under that situation. And that's why I studied them, because that's where we're heading. You know, they've always been, you know, it's always been very competitive. They've always had a huge population, you know, too many people to feed. So that creates a very ruthless kind of society. Their emperors were some of the most ruthless bastards that ever lived. Evil psychopaths, just like every other emperor and king is a psychopath. I think there's maybe three in history that weren't, but most of them certainly were. So by studying that, how ruthless they can be. And again, that's why I wrote the book, because what I said earlier, you know, we trust too much and we believe things too much. We don't step back like a warrior and analyze things from a strategic and a ruthless perspective. And so the 36 strategies of ancient China are, are strategies that show, when you read them, how ruthless people can be. Once you get, you know, what kind of tactics. I mean, this is standard operating procedure. You know, these types of ruthless techniques, how devious and cunning people can be to get what they want. It's good that you should know how that works so that you don't become a victim of it and that you don't believe all the bull that, that's fed to you. So
sure.
That's sort of why I read that, wrote that.
Well, a couple of things. Okay. In your book, observe the fire on the opposite shore. And you say, delay entering the field of battle until all the other players have become exhausted fighting amongst themselves, then go in full strength and pick up the pieces. Which is very, very interesting. And that's from Sun Tzu. Sun Tzu?
Yeah.
Or Sun Tzu.
In manner, Sun Tzu.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you could use that in politics, correct?
They use it all the time. We can see this is what's happening with Trump and the left.
Yes.
Libtards. This is really easy. You know, they've set that up. That's why they're doing this. And also same thing with the race baiting. You know, they're doing a lot of race baiting. Everything is race, 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 misogyny. So they're pitting the men against the women using feminism, right? It's a misogynist society. It's a patriarchy. All the women are freaking out. You know, we see this million woman march or whatever nonsense went on the other day. Look.
Oh, Soros is the one that funded that. And nobody even knew about it. I didn't even hear about it. I hadn't heard anything about it until after it was over. And I thought, oh my goodness. And it wasn't a march. It was every woman, was to be absent for the day. Well, who knew, you know, until after it was over?
There was some big march too.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That was like 2 months ago or something. But anyways, you know, women are marching because Trump won or he said something about grabbing women. Meantime, at this very moment, how many women are being sold into sex slavery? How many children, young females, their clitorises cut out with a piece of broken glass, and not a word from the feminists. You know, we know that all over the world, female sex slavery is the largest form of slavery, and it exists everywhere. And not a peep from the feminists who care about women so much. You know, and the
that's true, yeah.
And even, you know, in India or Saudi Arabia, where they're beheading women because they let their veil drop. No, not a word from feminists. No, Trump says, talks about a dirty joke and, oh, they're all, you know, in the streets protesting and dressing up with hats and, you know, madness. So, but why? Why? Because they care about women? No, they don't care about women. It's got nothing to do with women. What it's about is dividing women and men.
Then we've got the black and the white, the racial, you know, antipathy. You know, they're, with this Black Lives Matter, another George Soros, you know, front or supported group. And, they're on the streets literally calling for the genocide of white people. I mean, you know, it's, that would be classified as hate speech if this, you know,
phony. Oh my goodness. If the whites were saying something like that.
Oh yeah. Oh. Can you imagine, you know, 5,000 white people running down the street saying, kill the blacks, genocide the blacks? Oh my God. But the blacks can do it. Why? Because it's part of this thing to turn people against each other. Now the white people are sitting there going, geez, they're pretty upset about us. You know, they want to kill us. You know.
Right. Wow. Okay, we're going to a 3-minute break. We'll be right back. Our guest is Stefan Verstappen. His websites are urbansurvivalstrategies.com and chinastrategies.com. And in your book, you have a chapter. It's called Hide Your Dagger Behind a Smile. And you state, charm and ingratiate yourself to your enemy. When you have gained his trust, you move against him in secret.
Yeah. Let me just quickly recap what the first.
Yes, go ahead.
Observe the fire on the opposite shore. Basically, that's divide and conquer. And this strategy is simple. It's causing people to fight amongst each other. Okay, so that's why, you know, we've got the racism, we've got the left and right, that's why we've got the feminism, and now they're throwing in Muslims and Christians. So, you know, everybody is fighting against everybody, and then they'll get exhausted and frustrated, and there'll be casualties.
Oh.
And once society has, because come on, what's going to happen? We can't live like that with everybody at each other's throats, you know. We can't. You know, what's going to happen to the country? The civilization, the society is breaking down. Women against men, Muslims against Christians, immigrants against whites against blacks against lefts against rights, and communists against fascists and Nazis. Oh my God. You know, give it a rest, folks. Just drop all this. We're all in the same slave pen, right?
I mean, indeed.
So, you know, we have all of us a common enemy, and it's not each other. Oh my God. So, that's the tactic they're using. Now, the tactic for that is so you exhaust the enemies, your enemies, by having them fight amongst each other, and you sow discord. That's another one of the strategies. And that's what this George Soros, Dr. Evil character is doing. I mean, he's funding all this stuff. It's classic. These strategies go back 3,000 years. It's nothing new. These people aren't geniuses. They're just evil. And they got the money to do what they want to do. And this is what they're doing to us. We are being played with all the strife, with the, you know, with the riots and the protests and all that. You're being played, folks. Stay home. Okay, if you can't do anything decent, then at least stay home, because this is falling into their hands. Now, once, and what I believe they're trying to do is completely collapse society, so that they can bring in the National Guard, and then, guess what? Well, we're going to save you, like the government is always there to save us. We're going to save you from each other, and what we need is a camera in every room in your house, and what we need is a tracking bracelet and a computer chip implant, and that way we can make things safe and make America great again. That's where they're going with this. So let's, you know, forget about all this. It's theater, all right? It's street theater, and none of it is real. But the reality will be tyranny. That will be a reality. All this stuff is just a big show, big performance. But after the curtains drop on this phony play, the reality is we're all in the same slave pen, and that's where we're going. So that's the tactic. Observe the
wow.
fire.
Well, as far as being chipped, we're already chipped, because all of the credit cards, and everybody's got a credit card.
Oh, yeah. Without
one. They're all chipped. All I have to do is just say, oh, this person can't buy anything anymore. So you go to the grocery store, you have your groceries on the counter. too bad. I'm sorry. The government says we can't sell to you anymore. So, and as far as the camera and the, you know, who knows but what they're doing that through our TV sets, that they are
doing that,
surveilling us through the TV.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, they are. And then with the smartphones, I don't have a smartphone. I refuse to get one.
I don't have, well, I have a cell phone, but I don't use it. It's, you know, it's in a drawer.
Yeah.
I don't use it.
Yeah. So, yeah, now the last strategy, the one you just mentioned, hide your dagger behind the smile. Again, this is, you know, this is the tactic that politicians use, right? You're everybody's friend. You say, you know, it's so simple for these people. You got to understand, or the average person should understand, that politicians are consummate actors and actresses. That's what they do. So they're just playing a role, and they play it very convincingly. And that role is hide your dagger behind a smile. I mean, you know, behind all the platitudes that they come out with, and kissing babies and shaking hands, and we're going to get jobs. I've heard that now for 40 years. Every politician wants to get jobs. So far, it hasn't worked. But all of this is just a facade. It's a fake mask. And behind it are some really nasty characters. And the other thing that people need to understand is that psychopaths are so much different from us. And what turns them on is something you can't conceive of. And that is, they derive pleasure from seeing people suffer. So, you know, when recently we have all this pedo-gate and the pedophilia, which we've known about for years, ever since the Franklin scandal, and even before that with all the, you know, the Catholic priest scandals. This has been going back at least to the 1930s and probably since the inception of the church to begin with. Cause that's what, you know, who's attracted, who wants to become a priest, for Christ's sakes, you know, not healthy people. Okay. Not, you know, real men don't want to become a priest. All right. That's not what happens. So, it's been going on for a long time, but why is it, are they sexually attracted to children? No. Because it's evil. They just like to do evil. It's so bizarre. And you can't believe it when you first see it, you know, when you read about it and you study these people and you go, what? You mean, so they just like to do evil for evil's sake? Yes, that's what they like to do. Because they're insane. They're morally insane. That was one of the earliest ways of describing a psychopath, was moral insanity. And that's actually still a good way to describe them, because they are insane in terms of morality in a way that it's really difficult for us to understand. But, and you got to understand it. And when you do understand it, then all this makes sense.
Wow.
So too, I get a little bit heated on that subject too.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. Well,
it's crazy, you know.
But there are other groups who hide, who conceal child abuse. They have, I mean, I know of one group of people who, well, I won't go into it, but they, you will never hear about it in the media. There are groups of people who get away with this evil behavior. You will never hear about it in the media, but the minute, and I'm not Catholic, but the minute a Catholic priest or a gym teacher or somebody like that, then you are going to hear about it. It'll be on the front page. But this other group that I know of, they have an 800 number. If anybody gets in trouble, you just call the 800 number. The lawyers are there to buy you off, or your local authority is going to say, oh, we'll take care of it. Don't worry about it. So, you know, it depends on who you are. So you can get away with stuff depending on, well, how many evil circumstances you set up to conceal your evilness.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of those groups, and yeah, they have their own built-in protection system, you know.
Sure.
And
in their own writings, they promote pedophilia. So I don't know why it should be such a big secret, because their holy books describe all kinds of activity, you know. So but you can't say anything, because then you're a bad person for pointing out that these people have
inculcated. It's okay. The Talmud said it's okay.
Yeah, in their own religious documents, it's okay to abuse children. But you're not allowed to point that out. I mean, yeah, okay, you know, it's, but again, all of that, yeah, you know, I have a real problem with what I call the Abrahamic religions, the three
sure.
of them.
Sure.
You know, anyone who knows anything about psychopaths, if you read the Bible, the character known as Jehovah or Yahweh or whatever is the biggest classic sadomasochistic psychopath in history. You could use that if you were to use the diagnostic tools, Robert Hare's diagnostic tool to diagnose whether or not people have, you know, on the checklist of psychopathy. Yahweh and Allah and Yahweh and Jehovah, these guys are top psychopaths. The whole religion is a psychopathic religion. All three of them, Christianity, Judaism and Islam, are three psychopathic religions. They're just, it's horrible stuff. It's just, it's psychotic.
But there are good people. I mean, I know some
people. Sure. Yeah. You know, because they don't know better. You know, they don't know what they're, look, you see.
It's a hierarchy that is evil. And the regular people are just following along because they think that they're doing something good. It's a hierarchy that we must be concerned about.
Always. But I think that this is pretty much genetics again. Some people are born good. I really believe that. And if they're born in China and they're a Buddhist, then everybody say, well, he's a good Buddhist, you know. And
sure.
If they're born Jewish, and everybody say, well, he's a good Jew. And if they're born Christian, everybody say, because it's intrinsic to their genetic nature. They are either and most people, you know, I really believe this, you know, because I know you're either born good with a deep intrinsic moral standard that you follow. And now if you have this moral standard that is part of your genetics and you're a Christian, then of course you're going to go through the Bible and find those verses that promote.
That apply, yes.
That apply to your moral, you know, the same thing
sure.
with the Buddhists and the Muslims, you know, Islam is a religion of peace. Well, if you're a peaceful person and you filter through all the crap, the rest of the crap, and find, you know, the two or three sentences that promote peace, then you're a good, peaceful Muslim, you know.
I think too, though, that we have, we need to realize who radicalized the Muslims to begin with, because prior to a certain time and point, everybody was getting along pretty well in the Middle East.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden Yusuf come in with all of their textbooks that were written here in this country. Then they got all radicalized. Or a lot of them did. But getting back to your book.
Yeah.
And we've already covered it, but you say, or Sun Tzu said, when a country is beset by internal conflicts, when disease and famine ravage the population, when corruption and crime are rampant, then it will be unable to deal with an outside threat. This is the time to attack.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, it's a strategy that countries use against each other, and we've seen that exact strategy outlined very clearly in the communist. Who was that communist defector that talked about the indoctrination, the subtle kind of war that communism wages against other countries?
So let's see. Let's see.
So he's an ex-KGB, defected to the U.S. He was interviewed back in the 70s. Communism.
You're not talking about Solzhenitsyn, are you?
No, not
Ostrovsky? No, he was later.
Ostrowski. He's Israeli.
That's right. Let's see. He's ex-KGB.
Every spy a prince. That's Ostrowski. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, the point is, this was part of the communist strategy as well. You know, how to...
Could you be talking about Putin? He's ex-KGB.
No, this is a...
I'm teasing.
But anyways, I forget his name. I can Google it in a minute. Hold on. But this is part of their plan. And this is, again, this is from the book, The 36 Strategies, and it's an ancient Chinese strategy, and that is that you infiltrate a country and you destroy it from within, right? So you right. promote corruption. You know, the stories are that the king will say to his spies, here's a whole bunch of money, you know, usually silver caddies, a whole bunch of money, go into the country and start bribing their generals and their ministers and their officials, get them all corrupt, and then, well, like the Japanese did in China just before the Second World War, is go in there and set up all these whorehouses and opium dens, right? Get them all, and then of course the British East India Company, they did the same thing to China.
Well, they did it first. I mean, actually,
they did it first. Yeah, the Japanese were Johnny come late. At least the British were already.
We're to believe that.
Yeah. No, that was the Black Dragon Society. They would have done that. I would have done it. If I was in charge of, you know, defending my country, you'd use strategies like that, to undermine another country. But look at what's happened to us. Our society, somebody is doing this to us. This is a clear strategy. Again, these people aren't geniuses. This stuff has been around for thousands of years. You know, when you travel in those circles of ruthless people out for power, they all know these techniques, you know.
Sure.
So,
somebody in the chat room suggested that it was probably Yuri Bezmenov?
Yes, Yuri.
We have such great listeners and we have such great chatters in the chat room. It's a really very educational place to go to.
Yeah, you got to watch that video if you haven't heard of it. Maybe put it in the chat room again. I can't pronounce his name. Yuri something, not on drop off. But anyway.
Bezmenov.
Yeah. Watch that video because it's very enlightening, you know, because he says that it takes them 20 years to completely indoctrinate a generation so that they're completely useless. And he said this 40 years ago. So.
Wow.
Yeah. And he said the most interesting thing he said too, he says, and once they're indoctrinated, they reach the fourth stage of indoctrination, which is, I forget now what he called it. Something like defeat or whatever, that at that stage, they can never be deprogrammed. He says, even if we were to take them to Russia.
Wow.
Show them.
All right. We're going to a 3-minute break, and remember, we will be taking calls in the next hour. We'll be right back in 3 minutes. All righty, we are back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Stefan Verstappen, and his websites are urbansurvivalstrategies.com. And ChinaStrategies.com. Now, what is your professional background?
I'm all over the place. Most recently, I worked as a publicist. I was in Silicon Valley. I was working in Beijing and Shenzhen. Before that, I was a martial arts instructor I still teach, but I was full time for about 8 years. I've worked for an Israeli commando.
What? Yes.
Yeah. You know, my background is so diverse. You know, I'm like the worst candidate for a job, but I'm also the best candidate to speak on things because I have
been everywhere, done almost everything. So, but what that's done is given me a perspective. I mean, I've worked in factories. I've worked in sawmills. I've worked on a farm. You know, I've also worked in business and finance and the entertainment. I used to be a sound engineer for a recording studio, a very big recording studio here in Toronto. Okay. I've played in bands. I've traveled the world. I've mountain climbed, hang glide. You know, I've done all that kind of stuff. I taught first aid and emergency rescue, wilderness survival. I was, an out tripper for the Toronto Boys Home. I was a detached street worker for like the worst neighborhood in Toronto. And
yeah, I was interested in that too.
Yeah.
How you were able to help in that kind of a situation. Yeah,
well,
it was interesting.
It was a very interesting experience because what happened was there was this lady, Lenore Suttis, and she was huge. She was like 360 pounds. Wonderful woman, big heart. She got a grant from the government. At that time, it was called a START grant or something like that, to run a community program to provide services to a very high-density, high-crime-rate community in Toronto, the first big ghetto in Toronto, right? And I was and she met me and my buddy, and she said, "You two boys, I want to hire you." We had no previous experience or anything like that. She says, "I got a good feeling about you two guys." And she hired us, and she trained us, and we took classes at university, and then we went out on the streets, and we created a bunch of wonderful programs, like after-school programs, drop-in centers, drug counseling centers. We even ran, like, a coffee house, live music for local bands and musicians to play, and, giving people something to do. We were so successful that the Prime Minister of Canada, Pierre Trudeau, I got a phone call one night from Robert Kaplan, the local MP, which is equal to like state senator, congressman.
Sure.
He said, "We've heard about your program, what you've done on so little money. I mean, you know, we ran all this on what, the average, government agency spends on coffee in a year, you know." And, we had, oh yeah, and a daycare center where you ran that all with volunteers and donated spaces and things.
Okay, we're at the top of the hour. We'll be right back and we'll take your phone calls. Be right back. All righty, welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Stefan Verstappen. He is the author of The Art of Urban Survival and The 36 Strategies of Ancient China. And your new book is called, A Master's Guide to the Way of the Warrior. And it's a guide to advanced means and methods of the warrior's way. And your websites are, did I already give those websites? I did.
Yes.
Okay. Oh, yeah. All right. Okay. We do have a caller on the line, but I do want you to finish your story about the MP calling you and what happened.
Well, anyways, Pierre is running for re-election. He wants to he's doing a tour, and he wants to come by and see what we've done. He wants to come to the coffee house that we set up and attend one of the concerts, you know.
Holy cow.
Yeah. The next day we were shut down. The government shut us down. So, to this day, no one knows.
Well, I think I know why.
Cut our funding.
Because it was working.
Because it was working. Yes, I know. You get it, Deanna. You know, because we were never given an explanation. But here's the thing. At that time, we were making $100 a week, which was good money. We did all this on a budget of $30,000 a year. Right? Now, there's all kinds of government agencies that are supposed to be providing services that do nothing. They don't do anything. And right. So, you know, we were so successful in such a short period of time that we even attracted-
They had to get rid of you.
They had to get rid of us. And again, that's the government. They don't want you. You know, so, this is why I've always been, you know, a great promoter of community activities and, you know,
yes.
Like Obama is supposed to be a community organizer.
Yeah, I was thinking about him when you said that, and I thought,
I know what a community organizer, they actually do things productively, and they And it's a wonderful, and that's where we need to get back to, because the government, as soon as they step in, it all turns to, you know.
Okay.
But anyways, that's the story about,
Okay. Alrighty, let's take a phone call. Let's take Chris near Las Vegas, not in Las Vegas, but near Las Vegas. Chris.
Well, thank you so much, Deanna and Stephen, for all the great provocative and informed information. If I might contribute, I was taking particularly note of your comparators to smiling in your face. Smiling faces sometimes be your friend and stab you in the back, all that sort of stuff, of our songs that we so love by the Fifth Dimension and others that we've sang for many, many years and been programmed and indoctrinated with. And I ran across a video that I thought was very telling and contributory to your psyops mind wars of the Sun Tzu's art of war, of mind warcraft, being that controlling the mind and inventing fear so that your opponent will give up instead of putting up a fight and be much more efficient to take over, was very relevant. And the site is Ruling from the Shadows is the name of the video from StormCloudsGathering.com. It's about a four-part series about Edwin Bernays and Joseph Goebel, Walter Lippmann, and other psyops mind control warriors who practice these mimetics or mimetics, where they suck your brain out and infect it and inject it with a new contagion of disinformation to deprogram and reprogram you.
Yeah. Yes, I'm familiar with the site, and I did watch those videos.
I had a feeling you probably were. I imagine Deanna is, and a lot of her listeners will also find them most intriguing. The one that caught my breath quite so impactively was the one where they hired the beautiful models from the ad agencies. Of course, Bernays claimed he didn't have anything to do with it, except maybe hiring the ad agencies, to spontaneously light up torches of freedom to free the women from the slavery of their men's control. And it was a very effective campaign to reduce and to increase the sales of tobacco companies of cigarettes to women who had been prior diametrically opposed to taking on such a nasty habit.
Yeah. Yeah, good point. And those are good videos. I'd recommend everybody to watch them. And Ruling from the Shadows is actually, I don't know if they took it from Sun Tzu, but it's certainly reflected in Sun Tzu, in that he describes that the best ruler is one who is not seen to rule, right? So, and it's a very common strategy, in Chinese philosophy, and that is to rule from behind the scenes, rule from the shadows. That's exactly the tactic. So, and even I think Confucius or Confucius also wrote the same thing, that the best rulers are ones that aren't seen to rule. So that's a very common theme in Chinese philosophy or political philosophy, certainly.
And that's our deep, dark, black state of the militant industrial complex that we are so loved of these days, that brought us Pizzagate and Blackwater and the craft and academia. So thank you so very, very much, Deanna, for having such an intellectual and well-informed writer and guest to bless us with today. Thank you, Stephen.
Well, thanks, Chris, for calling in.
Thank you, Chris. All righty. Yes. He always has a lot of good things to say.
Yeah, he seems to know what's going on.
Yep. So anyway, callers, the telephone number is 800-313-9443. We welcome your calls and your comments and questions. Another one that you have, another title in your, I like this book. I really do, because it's very concise. Kill with a Borrowed Sword.
Yeah, you don't use your own resources. We see this in business, right? There's a certain group that does business, and they have a very common saying on their group, is that you don't invest your own money, right? You always use somebody else's money into your business. And this is kill with a borrowed sword. So in finance, what this is you get other investors, and you get loans, and you get banks, and then, you know, if you make money, you make money. Then you get a part of it. But if you lose money, you don't lose money. All your investors lose money. So, you know, our whole, excuse me, economic structure is set up exactly that way. All these Wall Street traders, I mean, they don't use their money. You know, Goldman Sachs and Deloitte Touche, I think they're out of business now, and the rest of them, they don't use their money. They use the teacher's pension, the teacher's union pension, or the firefighter's retirement pensions. That's the money they use for all their gambling. And that's, so when they make money, they, you know, pay themselves millions of dollars in bonuses and all that. But when they lose money, the government has to bail them out, or, all the teachers, well, you're shot of luck on your pension, you know. So, kill with a borrowed sword means to appropriate the resources of somebody else. It's a parasitic type of strategy, you know. You don't go out and fight the battle yourself. You get somebody else to do it. So in finance, it's get somebody else's money. In combat or in warfare, it's you get somebody else to be the foil, you know, for your you sucker him into being on the front line and taking the first shots. Sure. You know?
Sure. You stand at the back or in your office somewhere.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like Eisenhower.
Yeah.
I think he was with his girlfriend, Summersby. Yes.
Yeah.
Wow. Another chapter. Loot a burning house. Okay, that we already talked about that one. Creating something from nothing. To win victory in battle, the leader must know how to use both direct and indirect methods. The interplay between direct and indirect methods generates countless tactics.
Yeah, that's a complicated strategy, and it applies really much more to warfare, but it can also apply to business and society as well. But this is about being, like, quick on your feet. You really have to be able to adapt quickly to changing circumstances. And every time circumstance changes and you need to adapt, you also need to devise a new strategy to take advantage of the changing circumstances. So, for this type of strategy to work, you really got to be smart. You got to be ruthless and very, very cunning, you know. So that's a difficult strategy. But the other one, create something from nothing, is exactly what it states. The best example of create something from nothing that we can see in our society is the Federal Reserve, right?
Mm-hmm.
Money from nothing. I mean, it's just make it up. Just print off these pieces of paper, and through that you can control the world. You can print as many pieces of paper all from nothing. So that's a great strategy, and we are a victim of it, and it's called the Federal Reserve System.
Sure. Wow. And we talked about this already, but I just love this title. Borrow a corpse to raise the spirit. And we've talked about that with the babies being thrown out of their incubators and whatnot. The Germans cutting off the Belgian children's hands in World War I. I mean, all you have to do is tell an atrocity story and bang, you're going to get people to come to your aid to go and kill these people.
Right. Yeah. Borrow the corpse to raise the spirit really applies to, you take something that's already outdated and antique. And you revive it, but as a pretense from which you can then, you know, use your cunning and your strategy to find an advantage. Let me give an example. Borrow the corpse to raise the spirit. Take something that's long since dead, revive it in order to use it as a front to, you know, work some other strategy. And we can see that now with the flat earth movement. You know, the flat earth has been dead for, you know, hundreds of years. Nobody believes the earth is flat anymore. And look, it's been revived. And now it's sort of permeated the whole alternative media field. And there's you know, websites that used to be somewhat credible in reporting political and social activities have been kind of tainted with this influx of these wacko theories about, you know, the flat earth. I'm sorry, I don't believe the flat earth, you know. But that's a classic example of borrow the corpse. Take something that's dead and revive it and use that and we can even see that in the, like the alien phenomenon. I mean, what they're reviving is the old demonology stuff, you know, demons from before it was from another level of hell, but now they're from another level of space. It's the same sort of thing. And what it's meant to do is just confuse people, trouble the waters, you know, poison the well. That's what they're doing with that.
Okay. Another tactic or strategy, never directly attack a well-entrenched opponent. Instead, lure him away from his stronghold and separate him from his source of strength.
Yeah, that is probably the number one military strategy every general should know. And even, you know, Clausewitz wrote about that.
Right.
All the great military strategists knew this. This is 101 strategy. Strategy 101. And yet, World War One, you know, they sat there in trenches for 4 years, slaughtering each other in the mud completely. And that's what I couldn't understand it, because I was researching it for this book. I'm going, everybody knows that you don't get into a trench and just sit there for 4 years and shoot at each other. This is insanity. And it was then that I realized that the generals were doing this on purpose to kill their own men. The American generals, you know, the big General Pershing, that he was a piece of work, wasn't he?
He sent
boys in to attack in a fortified position, knowing that the armistice was for 3 hours. And he killed how many more? Another 1,500 kids?
Exactly.
You know, 17-year-old farm boys from Iowa having their heads blown off because this, you know, wants to have a little bit more blood on his hands. He wasn't quite satisfied with the slaughter.
It's terrible.
And now he's got a statue in West Point. You know, this is the lunacy.
It's terrible. And of course, that's what people are doing now. That's what the generals are doing now.
And that's what they're doing now. So never attack an entrenched fortified position. Of course not. You know, the guys in the castle, you know, all those sieges, these castle sieges, almost never did they ever go over the wall and kill these people. What you do is you sit outside and you starve them out. That's the way they've always done it. So World War One and Two and this and that. And the same thing with Iwo Jima and the other islands there that they got bogged down and they were huge slaughterhouses. None of that was necessary. They could have blockaded. They controlled the air. They controlled the sea. They could have starved those Japanese out in a year and a half, and they would all have surrendered or died of starvation. There was no reason to kill all those young American boys for nothing. And the thing is, like I said, this is strategy 101. These generals knew this. And they let all these boys die for nothing, for nothing. That's how I knew. That's when I started to go, what kind of mentality could do that? And then I came across psychopathy, and I started researching into psychopathy because I needed to understand how these generals could kill their own men like that.
Sure.
And it's because they're psychopaths.
Sure.
And that's what started my whole research into psychopaths. And
wow.
Yeah. No.
Well,
strategy.
You only had one general in World War One that was worth anything. That was Smedley Butler. Who wrote War's Racket. Anyway, we do have a phone call, caller. Let's take Fred in Iowa. Fred, welcome.
Yeah, hi, Deanna and Stefan.
Hi, Fred.
Hi, Fred.
Yeah, I got a lot to say so people will understand where I'm coming from.
Okay, go ahead.
I tuned in about 50 minutes ago, and a damn good show. You're covering a lot of things. You're covering all the symptoms. Now, I'm going to make two statements about myself, and the first thing that enters your mind, where do you think I'm coming from? Here's the first one. I believe that a man should be the head of the household. Number two is I believe in separatism, Now, give me what you think on where I'm coming from, would you please?
It sounds like a traditional viewpoint.
Yeah, sounds traditional to me.
Yeah.
Sounds reasonable.
Okay,
I don't find it radical, shocking, no.
Pardon?
I do not find that it's radical in any way, no. I think it's traditional. Men should be the head of the household. I mean, in conjunction with women. Oh my God. You know, when, you know, those of us that have experienced normal relationships, you know, there's no guy's ruler and all. It's a team effort. You know, the man is the head in terms of providing, for the household and protecting the household. And in that case, he's the head of it. So there's nothing wrong with that.
Okay. Why should the head of the household? Where do you get that mindset, that thought from?
I don't know. What do you think?
Deanna, I'll answer that question in a second here. Deanna, where do you get the idea or the thought that the man should be the head of the household?
That was the way I was indoctrinated.
Indoctrinated by whom and what?
Well, probably, you know, I grew up in kind of a non-traditional family. At least I figured out that it was non-traditional after I was no longer kind of a part of it. But I think that it's a Christian tradition that the man is supposed to be the head of the woman. But I don't see anything wrong with that. I think it is traditional and what it implies. Well, because he's stronger, he is more capable protect all those things that Stefan talked about before, of protecting the home, of fortifying the home, of making a living, that kind of thing.
Okay, I'll answer Stefan's question and yours. That comes from the Bible.
Yes, I know. Okay, we're going to
hold me over?
Yeah, we'll hold you over. We'll be right back in 3 minutes. All righty, welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest is Stefan Verstappen. And let me just share a fact with you that one of my good friends Skyped me. World War I was started on Good Friday, April 6, 1917, as far as the United States goes. Ironic, right?
Yeah, unless you know what the churches are really about, then it's not ironic at all, you know.
Wow. Okay. Fred, you were talking, said that it was from the Bible, and that's true. However, I believe that characteristically, that men and women have inherent characteristics that make them more suitable to function in a particular way. I think that a mother, a woman, can rear children and teach them and should teach them the basics, teach them what they need to know. In order to be, not that a father does not contribute, but I think that each male and female have inherent characteristics that make them best at what they do. And that doesn't have anything to do with the Bible. That's just the way that we are created, the way that we are, because men and women are different.
Well said. This is an extraordinary program. I didn't want to go off on another, I got too much to cover and I have a limited, I know. Okay. I will cover what you said, Deanna. After the fall of Adam and Eve, where did the important job go to? Man is the head of the household, but the important job was given to the woman, and that was the raising and the teaching of children. So therefore, with my beliefs in the Bible, thus saith the Lord, thus saith the Bible, women were given the more important job. but man was to be the head of the household. Get back to Stefan's question about what he asked me. It's from the Bible. And the answer to your question, it's not tradition, Deanna. It is thus saith the word. But here I want to go on. For 3 years and 1 month, I've been trying to get this out. And that's caused a lot of flack. And I'll have to explain this after I say it.
We have very limited time, and we do have other callers.
I know, but this is important. Okay. I've tried to get out the first beast of Revelation, who it is, and the second beast of Revelation, and who it is, that gives his power unto the first beast and the false prophet.
Okay. Fred, sorry to interrupt, Fred, but I think we should move on because this is not a show about Bible philosophy, you know. And,
exactly.
It's good for another time, another place, you know.
Exactly. Okay. Fred,
thanks for calling in, though. Much appreciated.
Yep, thank you. Bye-bye, Fred. Okay, let's take Gather from Oklahoma. Gather, I'm sorry. It's spelled Gather, so.
Yeah,
okay, Gather, I'm sorry. You need to have an I in there. G-A-I, Gather.
Yes, that's what my name is, G-A-I-T-H-E-R.
Oh, okay, Okay, so it's G-A-I.
It's actually Gautier. It's Gautier, but it's in English.
Okay,
my name's actually Gautier Bouvier, so, but anyway, in English.
You must be Canadian.
Or Huguenot, a little bit. But anyway, I was gonna, get your opinion, Stefan. You have neighbors, and you do that neighborhood block party deal, and everyone brings out what the neighborhood problems are, and I said, you know, the older kids need to slow down on the sidewalk with the little kids. And we have this one prominent rabbi guy. He stands up and goes, well, we want to thank our little Christian family for bringing this to our attention. And just blew right over it. You know, it's not a big major deal. So then he's my next door neighbor, so. Then, like, just the other day, they're out there getting out of the car, and they went back from their church or whatever. And, I said, oh, how's my Semitic family? Oh, do you want to hold me over?
Yes, Gaither. We will hold you over. We'll be right back in 3 minutes. This is Deanna. And Stefan Verstappen is our guest, and his websites are urbansurvivalstrategies.com and chinastrategies.com. And we are talking to Gaither in Oklahoma. Gaither?
All right. Anyway, back to the story is they did the little our little Christian family at the picnic, and so they came in the driveway, and I was like, all right, so. Well, how's my little Semitic family, you know? Boy, that guy was waving his arms as I got making right over. He goes, hey, man, we don't like being called that. They go, what do you mean? I said, ever since I've become a Holocaust denier, I get called it all the time. He goes, well, we're Ashkenazi. We're Caucasian. We're from the Caucasoid. I said, oh, well, how do you guys end up with all this land out there in the middle of the Middle East? He goes, well, that's just the Bible. And I'm going, oh. And he goes, but we don't call us that. And I go, oh, okay. So I'm just curious, what's the deal with that? Is there a special set? Well, or am I missing the picture? What do you think, Stefan? I'll take the answer off, right? Thank you, bye.
Well, I'm not sure what the question is. I mean, everybody has in-group preferences. This is natural biology. The same thing with Frank, with the head of the household, and it comes from the Bible. Well, it comes from the Bible, comes from the Quran, it comes from the Buddhist sutras. It's biology. You know, that's human nature. And the same thing, with different groups. What we people in the West have made a mistake, especially with all this immigration and these liberal attitudes, is we don't understand that the people we are letting in have in-group preferences. So you know, we'll let all these people into the country, and they are in it for themselves. They're not in it for us. And so the results of that are going to be that they're going to try and exploit their environment like every other group does. And so, well, it's difficult. You know, people should be with their own people, because I know it sounds terrible. Everybody's got this diversity is our strength nonsense, but it's not. I mean, study after study has shown that diversity is not a strength. It's a weakness. It will destroy society. It destroys social cohesion. And why? Well, because it's basic behavior. It's primate behavior. It's animal behavior. It's so intrinsic to our nature. I mean, it's the result of, you know, a million years of evolution. This is how we developed as a species, you know, that we favor our own against the rest, against competitors. And so if you have a group that's in your neighborhood that's from a different tribal, has different tribal connections, well, it's not going to be surprising that they're going to look after their own, and that's the way things are. That's just a basic human nature.
Of course, if the military wasn't bombing all of these countries to smithereens, people wouldn't have to flee.
No, I mean, yeah, exactly. You know, like I don't have anything against these people. You know, thing is, you know, like we know that it'd be far cheaper to pay for them in their own countries. You know, it'd be a lot cheaper for us to build houses in Syria and ship food to Syria than to bring them over into this country. Because first of all, you know, the cost of living is so much different. You know, to feed one Syrian family in the United States, you could probably feed 50 Syrian families in Syria. You know,
sure.
So, I mean, this whole thing of immigration is somehow benefiting. It benefits nobody. It doesn't benefit the people that come in, and it doesn't, well, a few of them to some degree. It doesn't benefit us that are hosting them, and it doesn't benefit the countries they're coming from. It'd be far better to pay for them to build their own houses. It'll provide jobs and income and things like that. I mean,
well, you know, they had jobs, they had income, they had houses until they were bombed.
Mm-hmm. So if we could, you know, stop getting suckered into all these supporting the, but you know what? The government just goes ahead and does it now anyways. There's no, you know, Congress is supposed to sign off on a war. They've been fighting wars now for 30 years. Congress never signed off on any of it. They just went ahead and did it, you know?
Sure.
And, we've just sat back and went, oh, well, if they're going to do that, I guess they're going to do it. No, look, we guys open our mouths and speak out about these things, you know, because they're just going ahead and doing it. They're lunatics. The lunatics are in charge. That's why they're bombing these poor people. You know, I mean, yeah, if we didn't bomb them, we wouldn't have this problem.
Sure.
We wouldn't have this problem if it wasn't for a certain state that got plunked right down in the middle of them all and has been agitating and radicalizing all the local tribes and religions and just causing the whole strategy like we heard before, you know.
Sure. Now, Gaither mentioned something, too, about how did they get the idea, I think he said this, how did they get the idea that that land belonged to them? God didn't give that land to the tribe. Britain did.
Yeah.
Quite illegally.
Yeah. So, I mean, what the hell is it of Britain's business to go around giving away Middle Eastern countries? I mean,
exactly.
Who the hell do these damn people think they are? You know?
Sure.
That would be like me saying, okay, well, you know, I got a friend that really wants your dining room set, Deanna. Give it to him. You know, like, I mean, what?
Sure.
What,
how about your dining room? How about your whole house?
Yeah, how about your whole house? Okay, get out. I got some friends who are going to move in. I mean, that's what happened. I mean,
sure.
It's madness. And then this whole thing, well, God gave it to him. Oh, please. You know, the Bible is...
somebody said in the chat room, diversity means chasing down the last white person.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, this is all part of a white genocide program. Yeah. The immigration and the lower birth and the feminism too. So women are working at jobs instead of staying home and having kids. You know, And white people can't afford to have kids. You know, we're too busy paying welfare payments to those that sit at home and pop out six kids at a time. I mean, it's all madness. But yes, it is aimed at destroying white people. Absolutely.
Well, the whole women's movement was a CIA operation. Gloria Steinem was CIA. She was recruited right from college, and that was her job.
Yeah,
she did it very well.
Yeah, no, that's ultimately, you know, one of the goals of the whole New World Order thing is to, you know, get rid of certainly Western culture, European. I don't like to say white people; it's Europeans. You know,
sure.
And that they're flooding Europe right now is just, I find it heartbreaking. You know, I traveled all through Europe when I was young. It's beautiful there. The culture, you know, I mean, and diversity, there already was diversity. There were Italians, there were French, there were, you know, they all had their language, their own cultural traditions, their own food. We didn't need any more diversity in Europe. It was already pretty diverse already. But no, it's to destroy European culture, because European culture is unique in the world. Now, I've lived in China and I've traveled through North Africa and all through the States, but, and Europe, but, you know, the other cultures don't have the, for example, China never once invented democracy in its 3,000 years. You know, China has never had freedom. It's always been an imperial tyranny. You know, like if you're poor enough, they don't care. They leave you alone. And so there's a certain amount of freedom in being a peasant. You know, still you're subject to tax and inscription into the army. But they've never developed the concept of freedom the way Europeans have. And that's why the powers that be want to destroy that, because we're the only people that invented freedom. We're the only people that eradicated slavery, you know. It wasn't Africans that got rid of slavery. It wasn't the Chinese that freed the slaves. It was always Europeans, you know. And because we have this really independence, individualist type of philosophy, it's harder to rule over us, you know. It takes a little bit more work on their part. And that's why they want to get rid of us.
Freeing the slaves. I mean, there was another reason for what you say, freeing the slaves, because anybody that works for, excuse me, that works for a corporation is more of a slave than the slaves were.
Yeah. No, in the fifth episode of my trilogy on Paradise Stolen, I write about, I speak about why we are poor. And the reason we are poor is because the government takes 80% of your income. I know it's hard to believe, but I did the math over and over again. The total take from the government, because it's not just your income tax, it's also sales tax and what's called an embedded tax, and also the cost of compliance. And these are all taxes on taxes on taxes. And when you add them all up, it amounts to about 80%. Now,
and inflation.
Inflation, because that's going to be the sixth episode, because I, at the end of this one, I say, and it gets worse, or, but wait, there's more, and inflation. So when you compare this, you know, I compare this to Robin Hood, you know, and evil King John and the tax collectors, you know, that Robin Hood was defending the poor peasants against the evil tax collectors. And finally, England did rise up in rebellion against King John because he had raised the tax from 10% to 15%. And this was enough to cause, you know, the peasants to rebel, and they forced him to sign the Magna Carta, and which is the, you know, the basis for the Constitution. So this was 15%. So medieval peasants paid less than we do in taxes. You know, we don't have a Robin Hood, you know, we need a few, but they rose up in rebellion for paying a tenth of the tax that we pay. A tenth. Plus, they had 2 months holidays a year for religious holidays and national holidays. And, do you know anybody that's got 2 months holidays a year? Yeah, not me. I don't know anybody that can take 2 months off a year. This is medieval, dark age peasants. We're better off than we are now. So we are slaves. We are. Make no mistake about it.
Absolutely. Yes. Somebody in the chat room made a couple of comments. Have you ever noticed that they never say that there are too many Chinese in China or too many blacks in Africa? No, it's only there are too many whites in Europe.
Yeah, yeah. Nobody's pushing for integration and diversity in China. First of all, the Chinese wouldn't put up for it for a second. I remember when I was in living in Taiwan, this was back in the 80s, and there was a little story in the local newspaper that at that time China was, because they were communists, they were in some cooperation agreement with some Nigeria or some other African country that was, you know, nominally communist. And so they had this student exchange program. And so there were black Africans attending a university in China. And at the end of the year, they had a prom or something like that. And some of these Africans invited Chinese women to come to the dance. Well, this so infuriated the Chinese people that the local villagers rose up with pitchforks and torches and marched on the university, and the People's Liberation Army had to come in there, and they gave all the African students 4 hours to pack their bags, and they were all flown back to Africa. So,
wow.
So much for diversity and tolerance in communist China.
Sure.
They wouldn't touch with it for a second. No.
It's interesting. When I was in China in 2007, I was talking to the Chinese guide. I was on a tour, and we were just talking privately, just he and I. And he said, well, you know, the Chinese people themselves are not communist. There's only about 200 communists, and they are the ones that headed the government. So yeah. Pardon me?
And that own everything.
Yes. Yes. Isn't that amazing?
No, it's not amazing at all. That's what communism is. It's a very corrupt system in which a few people own everything. I mean, it's completely opposite of the whole claim of, you know, collective wealth and all that. That doesn't happen in the communist. It's again the smiling face that hides the dagger. That's communism. They come in there and say, oh, we're going to look after the workers and, you know, equality and all of all. Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. And then once they get power, what happens is they own everything and everybody else is dirt poor.
Like in America.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I was under before it became more liberalized, but, you know, there were special stores that the Communist Party people can go to and buy, you know, good stuff, you know, and everybody else had to make do with lining up for a week old bread, you know. No, that's the way it worked. That's communism. It's just farce. It always has been, and it always will be. That's why all these socialists, they're lunatics. But like that Yuri guy said, you can't convince them otherwise. Once they're that indoctrinated, you cannot deprogram them.
Exactly. Okay, we do have some other callers. Let's take Franklin. Franklin, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you so much for taking my call. And your guest had said that they want to destroy pretty much European culture. And I just can't seem to understand why, because European culture brought so much good to humanity. If you look at Asia, and I've been in Asia, you know, child labor, prison labor, indentured servitude still goes on today, especially in the outbacks. Look at Western culture. Look what they brought in. The 8-hour workday, social safety nets. They brought in, you know, a form of representative government. Why would they want to destroy something that brought in so much good for humanity?
Because it brought in so much good for humanity.
But it's so evil.
But that's what I'm trying to tell people. Like, you can't understand these people. Why would they kill the golden goose? Because they like killing. Why would they destroy a culture that produced so much good for the world? Because they hate goodness. They're evil. They like to do evil. And when they see good, they want to destroy it. And I know it's insane. It's madness. And that's why the early term for psychopath is moral insanity. They're insane. Morally, they're insane. They want to kill it because it is good. You answered your own question, Franklin.
I thank you so much for explaining. Diana, you have a great guest. I hope he comes on again. Thank you so much.
Thanks, you, Franklin.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's take, got Tom from Utah. Tom, welcome.
Hi, Deanna and Stephen.
Hi.
Hey, Tom.
Deanna's had me on, and I exposed a criminal act by the government. And I wanted to see, I haven't had the opportunity to check with my Canadian brothers and brethren to see if this same thing impacted them. I know this is kind of, out of the blue, but Deanna, you might help it. But anyway, I identified a program put in place to kind of, the general way that I say it is to manipulate the population or manage the population, specifically the poor. So would you go on my website, gassingamerica.com, and call me back and let me know if this impacts Canada.
All righty. Thanks. We're going to a quick break. Be right back. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Stefan Verstappen. He is the author of The Art of Urban Survival. He also wrote The 36 Strategies of Ancient China and A Master's Guide to the Way of the Warrior. His websites are urbansurvivalstrategies.com and chinastrategies.com. Now, what Tom was talking about is that HUD, if you visit his website, gassingamerica.com, HUD actually approved of a construction, the manufacture of mobile homes in which the air is poisoned by design. And this was HUD's design, and it's killing a lot of people. Between 17 and 34 million people in America have been and are at risk to poisoning. And does this happen, or has it happened in Canada? To your knowledge?
To my knowledge, no, but it wouldn't surprise me if it did. But no, the HUD program is completely different. We don't have anything like that here in Canada. But what I can say is that there's a package of indoctrination and programming that consists of education, government, media, music, newspapers. And this package has been implemented the same everywhere, because I get a lot of people that write to me, and they, because my prepper background, they want to escape. You know, we all want to get away from this, right?
Sure. Where can we go? What country can we go to? Right.
What country can we go to? Where can we run to? And the thing is, there is nowhere to run to, because every country is already infected with this. What we see going on in the United States with the political correctness and the feminism and the immigration and the welfare state and all the indoctrination and the educational system and the media and the music and the movies and the TV and all that, exactly the same in Sweden, exactly the same in Britain, and the same in Holland, the same in Germany, the same in Australia, the same in Canada, the same in New Zealand. It's been instituted everywhere. I mean, they even have videos of our prime minister saying exactly the same speech as the Australian prime minister. I mean, word for word. I mean, they don't even try to pretend that it's all coming from a different source. It's all coming from one source. So there is nowhere to escape. No. So if it's happening there, probably it's happening here. I don't know about it, but it could be. But we are trapped everywhere. It's all the same. It's scary. There is a one world power. There's a one world government, and they've already pretty much taken control.
Right. Now, I know that there are some countries in South America that seem to be inviting, but like you say, it's going to spread throughout the world. That's why they call it a one world government, right?
It's already here, folks. We're already
here. Sure.
In it.
Yep. Yep. We don't have to wait for it to come. It's already here.
Yep.
Well, thank you so very, very much for being on the program today. I always enjoy talking with you and learning about psychopathy. And, it has certain characteristics. But I think if you were to name one characteristic, what would that be?
Selfishness. Yeah.
They just think of themselves.
That's all they think about.
Wow. Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye. Take care, listeners. Talk to you next week.